stay connected to the world around you, KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
It feels almost impossible in this day and age to escape immigration news and discourse.
Rallies against immigration raids that began in Los Angeles have spread to other cities, including New York, Chicago, and Milwaukee, with some clashes reported between protesters and police.
All right, to Chicago now, where protests have erupted there. That is where the Trump administration is ramping up immigration enforcement in a plan it calls Operation Midway Blitz.
Every day, a new executive order, enforcement strategy, raid, or separated family makes its way through our news feed, and the hot takes and heated debates are relentless.
I'm an immigrant myself. I'm first generation, and I'm all for people coming and bringing something and adding something to the country, but I feel like we're on this point where a lot of people are coming just to get everything that they can out of the country without contributing much to it. So I'd say it's time to focus on the people already here.
I totally and completely disagree with every factual part of that. I think that nobody comes to the United States for our welfare state here. It just doesn't really exist. Even the illegal immigrants that we have here are working.
The country is split between those who feel the current administration is destroying the very fabric of a diverse American identity
and those who feel it's finally doing something to fix an immigration problem that they believe is the root cause of many of the nation's woes.
When I came to this country, I stood in line for hours and days before I could get my green card.
The avalanche of commentary and slogans on both sides is endless. So today we're going to focus on one assertion.
Being deported. Yeah, I will be okay. They can be deported, but they can also apply to come back to the United States, but do it the right way.
If you're going to come to America, then you've got to do it a legal way, right? There's plenty of other people who do it the legal way and wait their time and go through that process.
Listen, whatever it takes to become legal, there are laws in place for a reason.
The claim that migrants need to get a ticket, wait in line, and enter the country the right way, just like everyone else, is a statement you have probably heard before and has become a go-to for those in support of Trump's immigration policies.
But how does the idea of doing it the legal way translate into practice?
Hola, hola. How are you?
Very good,
very good. Only English, please, okay? ¿Cómo estás?
Bien, mi amor, ¿y tú?
Bien, bien.
That's Chama. Chama is a Venezuelan exile from Caracas.
She fled her home almost 10 years ago after it became impossible to live a normal life there.
He's a friend. You want to know him? You want to meet him? No. Whatever you want, lo que tú quieras, mi amor. Hey, Julio, si quieres lo vienes a conocer. Julio.
And no, Chama is not her real name. Chama is a nickname Venezuelan friends use to refer to each other.
Chama agreed to be interviewed on the condition that port of entry not identify her, because she doesn't have legal status and fears deportation from the U.S. She currently resides in L.A., where she works as a live-in nanny for a young family with a three-year-old baby boss.
Esto es tu jefita número uno, ¿eh? No puede.
My baby boss.
Baby boss.
You see, Chama entered the U.S. the right and legal way back in 2022.
Legal based on policies set by President Joe Biden's administration. Fast forward to 2025, Chama was one of hundreds of thousands of migrants that lost their legal status with an executive order from President Donald Trump.
And that's why now she is bound to the shadows.
Undocumented. Chama's story is a testament of unbridled courage and perseverance when forced to navigate volatile political tides, tides that are indifferent to the human lives caught in the middle.
Be it in her home country of Venezuela or here in the U.S. Today's episode will delve into the first chapter of Chama's migrant journey, her odyssey out of Venezuela and her determination to reunite with her family via Tijuana.
And part two will explore her path into the United States, the Herculean effort to do it the legal way, and despite all her efforts, how the system ultimately failed her.
This is a special report, Illegal by Decree, part one.
From KPBS, this is Port of Entry,
where we tell cross-border stories that connect us.
I'm Alan Lilienthal.
And I'm Natalie Gonzalez.
From El Centro to everywhere, we're Voices del Valle.
Voices del Valle?
Voices del Valle is a team-produced podcast about coming of age in California's Imperial Valley.
I love Voices del Valle.
On the next episode of Voices del Valle, we will talk with teens about their cheer and soccer championship seasons. I've got to listen to that. Voices del Valle, fresh voices, bold stories made in the valley.
Voices del Valle, find us on KPBS or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to Port of Entry.
Mis primeros años en Venezuela son una Venezuela que ya no existe.
Chama's story dates back to a Venezuela that for her doesn't exist anymore.
Son lugares, personas, costumbres, el nombre del país que ya no existe.
People, places, customs, names that aren't there anymore and feel like fiction or fantasy.
Porque no es lo mismo cuando tú te vas y tienes a dónde regresar, a cuando tú recuerdas que a dónde vas a regresar ya ni siquiera está.
Throughout our conversation with her, the nostalgia of longing for those times in her homeland were very palpable.
Cuando comenzaba diciembre en Venezuela, eso eran fechas patronales. Para mí, recordar mi infancia es recordar los diciembres y los veranos.
She especially recalls spending time with family during Venezuela's holiday season in December, which in contrast to ours in the Northern Hemisphere is summertime.
And in Venezuela, a hot tropical Caribbean summer at that.
Los diciembres era un 24 con la familia de mi papá o de mi mamá y viceversa en el 31. Y estábamos todos juntos y regalos y prosperidad, todo bien, todo bello.
Chama remembers having a privileged upbringing, never really feeling like anything was missing during her childhood.
Creo que el único momento en que yo me sentí privilegiada en mi vida fue de niña.
Her father was an oil rig engineer turned insurance broker, and her mother, a university professor turned K-12 teacher.
Sí, tuve una infancia muy privilegiada. Mis papás les iba muy bien, gracias a Dios. Fui a colegios privados, podía viajar, nunca nos faltó de nada.
They could afford the blessings of their hard work, a house with a pool, private schools, and family vacations abroad.
But that wasn't the reality lived by the majority of Venezuelans.
In fact, Chama mentioned the country was far from perfect.
There were stark differences in social and racial classes that were visible in her everyday life.
But prosperity and abundance were also visible. People were able to splurge for Christmas gifts.
It all changed for her and her family when Hugo Chavez rose to power in the 1990s to eventually become president in 1999.
En Venezuela, viene su hora, y es que llegó la hora del pueblo.
The impact of Chavez's rise to power can still be felt decades later, and the story of how it happened is as dramatic as it is consequential.
There's failed coups, frauds, constitutional resets, geopolitical blockades, petrodollars, corruption, embargoes, and hyperinflation.
It's all a telenovela unto itself.
While diving into all that is not relevant to our story, it did play a part in how Chama and an estimated 7 to 9 million Venezuelans were forced out.
Whether under the Chavez regime or his successors, Nicolás Maduro.
They've trekked for hours across the Guajira Desert, nestled between Venezuela and Colombia, to join this long queue.
On the floor or bunk beds, alongside each other, more than 170 Venezuelans are sharing three bedrooms, two bathrooms, and every single space there is left in this makeshift shelter on the outskirts of Lima.
Today, the growing migrant crisis in Latin America. As hundreds of thousands of Venezuelans flee their country seeking economic and political stability, what can the international community do?
The policies and actions of the Venezuelan government over the last two decades have displaced millions of Venezuelans.
And Chama's family was no exception.
¿Dónde están?
Sudáfrica, Inglaterra, México, Argentina, Perú, Bolivia, España, Londres, Malasia, Indonesia, Bogotá.
Regados.
Todos. Todos.
Chama's family and friends are all scattered around the world, pushed out by the crackdown on dissent, insecurity, and what Chama calls...
La cotidianidad imposible.
La cotidianidad imposible.
That's Spanish for the impossible daily living conditions.
Y siempre había como racionamientos por temporadas de calor, de agua. Que hay mucho calor, que no está bajando el agua, que bajó el pozo, no sé qué. Una que otra vez. Eso empezó a cambiar, a ser más frecuente y más frecuente y más frecuente. Y a partir como del
Things 2000, like extreme water rationing that gradually escalated from one day a month without water to once a week, to 3 days without water a week, to four, to five, to only having water for 30 minutes each day and a full day of water once or twice a month.
Era media hora al día. Cada y una vez al mes, agua. Yo no me podía lavar, bañar. Imagínate cuando tuvieras diarrea, que te da bastante porque el agua no es de la mejor calidad, y que tengas la regla.
It was hell when you couldn't flush the toilet, or as a woman when you were on your period, Chama mentioned. You just couldn't bathe.
Entonces, eso de que no te puedas bañar, que buscar una lonja de pan se convertía en una cola de 4, 5, 6 horas. Una lonja de pan.
There were insane 4, 5, 6 hour queues just for bread.
There was a food rationing system with cards and designated days to get chicken or beef or coffee.
Que tienes número para agarrar, tenías número para agarrar el café. O sea, tenías número, tenías días a la semana que podías comprar pollo, arroz, carne, o sea, supuestamente.
Even getting food supplies for her baby was a whole quest unto itself.
Pero imagínate vivir en esa circunstancia que tú dices. O sea, no puede ser que cada tarea que voy a hacer, darle de comer al niño, ir a trabajar, se convierte en una misión imposible, apoteósica.
Normal daily tasks that we take for granted would just be impossible.
No, no puedo vivir así. O sea, ni siquiera fue izquierda, derecha, no, y fue todo eso, y súmale la inseguridad.
Then there was the insecurity.
A mí me apuntaron más de 7 veces.
I was held at gunpoint 7 times, Chama said.
Yo le pregunto aquí a la gente si le han apuntado alguna vez en la vida y nunca, no conozco la primera persona desde que yo salí de Venezuela que no sea venezolano a la que yo le haya preguntado así como tú y yo somos amigos. ¿A ti te han apuntado en la vida de verdad? ¿Te han apuntado para matarte?
The indignation she felt propelled her out of her seat. She formed a gun with her fingers and pointed it at her producer Julio while asking him if he was ever held at gunpoint.
Have you ever been mugged? Ever? Has anyone held you at gunpoint in your life to kill you?
She said.
Nadie me ha dicho a mí que sí.
Chama hasn't met anyone outside of Venezuela who has.
The poverty, the hunger, the insecurity, it all led to social decay. What was seen in the streets of Caracas, Chama says, was unspeakable.
Pero sí siento que a partir del 2010 hubo como... Se sentía en la calle a partir del 2010 una locura más que tú decías, coño, no puede ser. Por ejemplo, ya al final, cuando me estaba viniendo, era ya sabido que estaban a niños de la calle usando granadas para asaltar a la gente.
Chama heard stories of kids using grenades to mug people, reports of minors, some of them very young, being sexually exploited for food.
Niñas de 6, 7 años prostituyéndose por comida. 6, 7 años.
Great.
Niños que nunca en su vida se habían puesto unos zapatos.
And while that may sound hard to imagine, there are many news reports from the time that described in detail the extreme lengths people went through just to survive. Chama just couldn't stay there. She couldn't keep her son there.
Yo no podía estar ahí. Yo no podía tener a mi hijo ahí.
So imagine an extreme shortage of basic goods, a fear for public safety, social decay, and when Chama attempted to advocate for change, well.
Estudiando la universidad, tenía amigos todavía estudiando la universidad, y ellos estaban bien activos.
She remembers helping activist friends design flyers, a website, and blogs that would spread dissident messaging in opposition to the current government.
Entonces yo les hice todo el apoyo a nivel visual. Los logos, los flyers, el website, toda la parte de diseño gráfico.
From that, some things got weird.
Acto seguido, me intervinieron los teléfonos, persiguieron a mi mamá en el carro con mi hijo dos veces. Me intervinieron mi cuenta bancaria.
She began experiencing different forms of harassment from unknown sources.
Her phone lines got tapped. Her family was followed by strangers in a car. Bank accounts were meddled with. Her email and social media accounts kept getting logged in and logged out.
Nadie, nadie, nadie. O sea, soy nadie. Era un diseñador gráfico cualquiera. Y es un psicoterror.
She was just a simple graphic designer feeling the whole weight of a campaign meant to intimidate her and leave her feeling afraid for her well-being and that of her family.
Chama wants to leave one thing clear. Politics wasn't the motivating factor for leaving.
Claro, yo he tenido una dictadura que todo funciona y yo me quedo ahí con mi dictadura. Relajada. Tengo agua, tengo luz, tengo vida, puedo entrar, puedo salir, puedo ahorrar. Instaura la dictadura que te la gana. No me importa, mientras yo tenga vida. Pero ese fue el problema, ya yo no teníamos vida.
Had she felt safe and had dignified living conditions, she would have stayed, regardless of Chavez or Maduro, or whatever the political situation may have been.
What she wanted was a place to live and prosper safely with her then 10-year-old son. For Chama, Venezuela in the 2010s just wasn't that place.
O sea, yo no puedo con esto, y yo no le puedo ofrecer a mi hijo esto. Y eso fue lo que a mí me hizo salir de Venezuela.
And that was the tipping point. The moment she knew she wasn't able to ensure a future for her son. She said goodbye to her life in Venezuela.
One hot, humid day in November of 2016.
She has never been back since that day.
Luckily, Chama had a way out thanks to her now estranged spouse.
But while her life would get safer, it by no means would get any easier.
In fact, Chama's journey to find a home was about to get very, very complicated.
Mi ex esposo es ciudadano. Él nació en Venezuela, pero sus padres no son de Venezuela.
Chama was married at that time to a man with dual citizenship, a Venezuelan national who also possessed citizenship of another country, which was treated more favorably by the U.S. Department of State in the early 2010s when he had left Venezuela.
We will have to omit her spouse's nationality out of fear of giving out too many details.
Chama's spouse had his green card approved via his second country of origin.
He had family in California, so he took off before she and their child did.
The plan was to be reunited with Chama and their child in L.A.
Y cuando él se vino, yo quería venirme a México. Él vino a vivir a Los Ángeles y supo desde Los Ángeles que podía llegar muy fácil a Tijuana en carro.
Chama originally wanted to stay in Mexico City.
But her spouse mentioned Tijuana was a better option since it would be easier and cheaper for him to drive down from L.A. to Tijuana than to fly down from L.A. to Mexico City.
Él me dijo, bueno, es más fácil en vez de agarrar un avión hasta Ciudad de México que yo agarré el carro desde Los Ángeles a Tijuana y nos podemos ver todos los fines de semana y no una vez al mes.
So that was the plan. Chama would wait it out in Tijuana while her spouse would push for family reunification in the U.S. with a petition titled I-130.
And Tijuana, not being the country's capital, would be cheaper than Mexico City. Right?
Grosso error. Tijuana es en dólares.
Chama and her spouse would find out the hard way that Tijuana is more expensive than Mexico City.
Nevertheless, it was still the best option for them.
Arriving in Tijuana was a bit of a culture shock for Chama, one that shook her to the core then and still moves her to tears now.
Yo tuve un shock cuando salí de Venezuela muy fuerte, sobre todo el tema de yo no entendía cómo había tanto y nosotros no teníamos nada.
Shopping at a supermarket would incite a flurry of mixed feelings. She remembers asking herself,
how is it possible that there's so much available here and so little back home in Venezuela?
Yo tenía que salirme de los Walmart, de los Soriana. Yo tenía que salirme. Me acuerdo y sufro.
Picking something as simple as rice, juice, or yogurt turned into a form of torture. She had spent her last years in Venezuela just dealing with a meager and scarce single option.
Chama shared that she suffered panic attacks from the overwhelming amount of choices available, sometimes having to leave the supermarket to catch her breath.
Yo no entendía cómo había tanto arroz. Y mi mamá tenía 6 meses buscando arroz.
A deep sense of guilt and powerlessness would wash over her as she recalled how her mother spent the last 6 months before Chama's departure searching for a bag of rice.
Último mes y medio que yo sabía que yo me iba, yo fui incapaz de comer completo en mi casa para que mi mamá y a mi papá le quedara comida cuando yo me fui.
The look on her face as she shared this, with water-filled eyes piercing with rage, revealed the pent-up anger at the system that forced her to skip meals so that her parents would have enough food after she'd gone.
¿Qué otra que hacía? Me paraba a las 3 de la mañana, 2 de la mañana, a bañarme.
She recalls opening the faucet at odd hours of the night in her Tijuana apartment to see if there was running water still.
A bajar el retrete. A lavarme las manos. A ver el agua correr.
Flushing the toilet and taking long showers, crying but happy that she and her son had a better life than back home.
Y después volví a abrir y decía, ¿será que me puedo bañar? Claro, no, son 10 minutos, me puedo bañar. Y me metí a bañar y lloraba. 3 de la mañana sola bañándome ahí. En mi apartamento de Infonavit. Más feliz imposible, bueno.
Tijuana, for Chama, was an oasis of warmth and rest. She felt the welcoming embrace of a city full of immigrants just like her.
But the cost of living wasn't that welcoming.
So finding employment was going to be key.
The moment it was decided Tijuana was a destination, Chama rolled up her sleeves in Caracas and started looking for potential job opportunities in Mexico.
She contacted a Mexican recruitment agency owned by some Venezuelan co-nationals looking for workers in the creative field. That agency would facilitate the networking with a pool of employers in Mexico.
This agency was well known for streamlining the work visa process for outside talent and fulfill the strict guidelines the Mexican authorities required.
They would take care of making sure Chama would get a work visa as soon as she landed a job with one of the employers in the pool that this recruitment agency already worked with.
By the time she arrived in Mexico, she had 2 job offers waiting for her. One with a famous Tijuana creative agency that constantly hired foreign talent, and another with a post-production studio founded by Venezuelan friends in Mexico City.
Ultimately, Chama went with the Tijuana agency's offer, as they offered to pay her more and in dollars.
So, she had the recruitment agency to facilitate the Mexican work visa process.
And she had an offer for a job that would sponsor the work visa. The stars seemed to be lining up.
One challenge, though.
Pero en ese momento, yo entré como turista, tenía que salir a los 3 meses, yo lo hice, salí, me dieron mi visa, me la aprobaron en México, me la pegaron y cuando volví...
Chama first entered Mexico as a tourist with a plan to seal the deal with his employer and then finalized the work visa process with the recruitment agency she'd contacted.
All within 180 days.
The max allotted time you get to spend in Mexico as a tourist.
At 90 days of those 180, she would need to exit Mexico and enter back to follow immigration law.
Then, after she re-entered, the clock would reset for the remaining 90 days.
With Chama established in Mexico with a full-time job, her son enrolled in school, and the work visa process underway, the first 90 days were coming to an end.
That's when things turned into an Odyssean trial.
La compañía que me había ayudado para que me pegaran mi visa en Venezuela, la cerraron.
The recruitment agency that was handling her work visa shut down.
Chama couldn't believe her luck. Why did it seem like this black cloud was constantly lingering over her head? She wondered.
Nevertheless, the famous creative agency she was working for offered a solution.
Ellos me habían dicho, bueno, termina ese proceso, que no lo tenemos nosotros, y nosotros te auspiciamos.
They would take over the work visa process, which was in their best interest, as Chama wasn't the only foreigner in their staff pool.
But they had to start from zero, as it would be a new request.
Chama had less than 90 days left to do it.
A highly improbable feat.
Y la compañía empezó a hacerlo. Y justo cuando la compañía empezó, tuvo retrasos, no sé qué, no se puede, qué plan, pinto, procesos burocráticos como siempre en toda nuestra América Latina.
To raise the stakes in that race against the clock, this famous creative agency hit internal strife and crisis amidst some scandals, and the role in Chama's visa process hit snags and dragged.
Se le retrasó el proceso y llevó más de 90 días. Y cuando ya pasó los 90 días, yo no podía hacer el procedimiento ya con ellos.
Ultimately, causing Chama to miss her window to obtain her work visa in Mexico.
At that point, Chama would have to leave the country with her son or become undocumented.
Exacto. Entonces, era el correr el riesgo de salir de México, volver a hacer el proceso de la visa y entrar.
She left the creative agency after failure to get the visa. And to add to her misery,
tan tan, se me venció el pasaporte.
Her passport expired.
Without a passport, she couldn't leave the country or enter another country. She was left stranded, virtually stateless.
With no credentials to her name.
Unable to open a bank account in Mexico or obtain a credit card. Forced to live in the shadows, in the informal sector.
Undocumented in Tijuana.
This season on Everybody's Doing It with Miss Lolly, I'm going to classes, workshops, and private venues designed to enrich and broaden our sexual horizons. And I'm taking you with me. I meet with an erotic mindfulness coach, get a pelvic floor exam, talk with new moms, and even put on my dancing shoes and take a beginning burlesque class, and much more. Find season 2 of Everybody's Doing It with Miss Lolly wherever you get your podcasts, and come join me in my search for fun and sexy adventures that are available to you.
You're listening to Port of Entry.
Chama's husband, facing his own employment challenges in L.A., was inconsistent in his support of Chama and their son. Chama started facing food insecurity in Tijuana.
Chama, though, was not bred to be a quitter.
As she puts it, she has a Ph.D. in surviving from the Chavez and Maduro School of Hard Knocks. Unable to get work formally in her field of graphic design or TV producing without a work visa, she sought work informally in a totally new field.
After she met a new friend who Chama noticed was making good money.
Y dije, ahí tiene que haber plata. Si hay tanto, ahí tiene que haber plata. Y con ese pensamiento, milagrosamente, conocí a un asistente dental.
The line of work?
Dental assistant.
Y yo le vi la vida que ella se daba y yo dije, ¿y esta no es la dentista?
Chama didn't have training as a dental assistant, but she knew how to coordinate and manage, so she pitched herself as a clinic administrator. The key?
Securing American clients from San Diego looking for cheaper dental care.
Her main asset?
Y gracias a Dios, di con una, con el poquito inglés que yo manejaba, que eso sí fue lo, esa fue la única herramienta que a mí me diferenció.
Her limited but handy English skills.
She met with a potential employer and was hired on the spot as the clinic already had a portfolio of American clients it was trying to retain and wanted to expand its client base.
The owners would later prove to be two of her guardian angels on her journey.
Entonces, gracias a Dios, ya ese eslabón de la cadena y me metí. Cuando me metí ahí, metí en una buena clínica y ellos empezaron a pagarme por debajo de la mesa. Y así me tuvieron 4 años.
She reached an arrangement with the clinic and was paid under the table. She quickly rose up to be its main administrator. She was there December of 2018 to 2022.
In the meantime, renewing her passport was another massive ordeal.
But a stroke of luck played in Chama's favor.
El gobierno mexicano reiteró el jueves que no romperá su relación diplomática con Venezuela y evitará confrontaciones con cualquier nación.
Nosotros no estamos buscando otra cosa más que el que se pueda avanzar hacia diálogo y paz.
During her time in Tijuana in 2019, under the new Mexican president Andrés Manuel López Obrador, diplomatic relations between Mexico and Venezuela improved.
La Cancillería mexicana ratificó desde el miércoles su reconocimiento al gobierno del presidente venezolano Nicolás Maduro y junto con Uruguay llamó a la solución pacífica a la crisis política en ese país.
That year, Mexico recognized Venezuela's government and allowed entry to Venezuelans seeking refuge. As diplomatic relations strengthened, the two countries reached an agreement to allow the issuing of Venezuelan passports in Mexico.
Afortunadamente, yo escogí el país que, con el que empezaron a sacar pasaportes y por primera vez pegué una.
It was as if the stars had aligned. Mexico was the first country to have this option, and Chama happened to be there.
Estaba en el país que era. Porque imagínate que la vaina hubiese sido que si con Bolivia. ¿Cómo coño voy yo desde Tijuana a Bolivia a hacerme el pasaporte? ¿Cómo entro a México otra vez de vuelta? No iba a poder entrar a México otra vez de vuelta.
Finally, a lucky break for Chama.
Remember, with the passport expired, she didn't have a way out of living in the shadows, undocumented. But with the passport, she would have more options.
Even if those options were limited.
Estuve 2 años y medio tratando de tramitar el pasaporte. Hasta que por fin me asignaron cita.
She would spend 2.5 years trying to get an appointment for that passport.
2.5 years. Dang, that's just a lot of time waiting.
Every day she would log into the Venezuelan Online Civil Registry, or SAIME, to request an appointment.
It took a miracle to get an appointment.
Then,
you've got mail.
The email she was anxiously waiting for suddenly dropped in her inbox.
But as is Chama's luck, blessings would sometimes come with a catch.
The catch this time?
Entonces, me avisan un viernes, su cita es el martes a las 8 de la mañana.
She received an email on a Friday for an appointment the next Tuesday morning, just a 3-day notice.
¿Y tú estabas dónde?
En Tijuana.
¿Y dónde era la cita?
En Ciudad de México.
She was in Tijuana.
And her appointment was in Mexico City.
Without a car, unable to drive, without access to a bank account to pay for a plane ticket.
Chama was on the verge of a panic attack.
Y cuenta con nosotros, son 2 días, no te los vamos a descontar y te regalamos el pasaje. ¿Me regalaron el pasaje?
Her employers, appreciative of all the work she did for the clinic, gifted her the plane ticket and gave her the days off with pay for her to be able to get her passport.
Y no me descontaron los días. Falté 2 días al trabajo y no me los descontaron.
Chama flew to Mexico City for her appointment and would receive her newly printed Venezuelan passport 6 months later in 2021.
A breakthrough.
But while things seemed to be going well in Tijuana,
Chama's relationship with her husband, who remained in L.A., had deteriorated as he failed to financially support Chama and their now 15-year-old son.
Despite that, he was committed to their agreement to work toward reuniting the family in L.A. He just couldn't finance the process, which left the financial burden on Chama.
She scraped by the following years as a dental clinic administrator in that same clinic and another one, working 48 hours a week with little time to herself.
And limited possibilities to save money. 2022 rolls in.
And Chama, trying to find a fix to her informal situation, found out about the refugee program in Mexico for Venezuelan nationals.
She decided to initiate that process in case the plan to enter the U.S. via family reunification fell through.
She didn't want to put all her eggs in her estranged husband's basket. So she weighed the decision of becoming a refugee in Mexico against entering the U.S. as a refugee.
But this decision had a catch.
She knew that getting asylum in another country would annul her possibilities of entering as a refugee in the U.S., so she didn't rush it and allowed the process in Mexico to move, but slowly.
Yo empecé, hice el run, todo, ya estaba en el proceso de que iba a pasar a ser refugiada oficial para pasar, para tener mis papeles eventualmente, porque a través de ese proceso en México, en 2 años, puedes ser ciudadano mexicano.
When she finally got an appointment with the UN Refugee Agency office in Tijuana,
which would put her on track to become a refugee and consequently a naturalized Mexican citizen in 2 years,
fate had other plans.
It's part of a Biden administration plan that will allow up to 24,000 Venezuelans the right to temporarily live and work in the U.S. if they can find an American sponsor.
Starting today, if you don't apply through the legal process, you will not be eligible for this new parole program. One must have a lawful sponsor here in the United States who agrees to sponsor you to get here. Then that person has to undergo rigorous background checks and apply from outside the United States and not cross the border illegally in the meantime. If they apply and their application is approved, they can use the same app, the CBP-1 app, to present at a port of entry and be able to work in the United States legally for 2 years.
Pero,
anunciaron el paro hoy.
The moment Chama learned the news that Venezuelans, just like Ukrainians fleeing the war earlier that year, could request legal status through the parole program in the U.S., she rushed to apply.
Immigration parole is like a temporary permission slip from the government that allows someone without a visa to enter the U.S. for a short time for a critical reason.
Such as a war or political instability in their country of origin.
Así, o sea, fue, yo creo que...
En cuanto salió,
yo creo que habría sido que si la número 10...
Chama says she was one of the first Venezuelans to be granted parole status.
She remembers the process being easy and straightforward.
Si tuve que bajar el CBP, pero solo como para que le tomaran una foto a mi pasaporte. Le tomé una foto a mi pasaporte, lo subí al sistema, usted ya tiene su permiso, imprímalo, véngase.
She downloaded the CBP-1 app,
uploaded a photo of her passport to prove she was Venezuelan,
filled out a form naming her estranged husband as the U.S. sponsor,
and next thing she knew, she was on a flight to the U.S., which was a requirement.
As you couldn't enter via a land port of entry.
Yo entré por avión. Viajé en avión de Tijuana a Veracruz y de Veracruz a Los Ángeles.
L.A. had been the North Star for years, the place where her son would finally reunite with his father, where she'd get the support she needed as a mother, and where, despite there not being a romantic relationship anymore, the family could reunite and find stability.
But not right away. Parole did not provide an immediate happy ending, all wrapped in a bow.
Chama's decision to leave Tijuana also meant leaving her son behind.
Temporarily.
While she figured out what his path to L.A. would look like. The roadblock this time was not legal, but financial.
And the options for Chama were difficult to digest.
She shared her feelings over a Zoom call as she was traveling with her working family.
Me genera mucha ansiedad acordarme eso.
To this day, remembering that difficult decision still gives Chama anxiety.
Porque no es fácil.
Forced migration is anything but easy. Leaving behind a life to start a new one comes with numerous challenges, especially during these times.
Chama is still working to overcome hers.
But now in the U.S.,
where a whole new set of obstacles has emerged.
We are following some breaking news out of Washington. The Trump administration is now telling migrants from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela that their legal status is being revoked. More than 500,000 migrants are now being told to self-deport or face being forcibly arrested and removed from the United States.
That's it for today, folks. We will return with the conclusion of Chama's story in part two of Illegal by Decree.
This episode of Port of Entry was written and produced by Julio César Ortiz Franco.
Adrián Villalobos is technical producer and sound designer.
This episode was edited by Elma González Lima Brandau and Julio César Ortiz Franco.
Lisa Jane Morissette is director of audio programming and operations.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Soy Alan Lilienthal.
Y yo soy Natalie González.
Nos vemos pronto.
From El Centro to everywhere, we're Voices del Valle.
Voices del Valle?
Voices del Valle is a team-produced podcast about coming of age in California's Imperial Valley.
I love Voices del Valle.
On the next episode of Voices del Valle, we will talk with teens about their cheer and soccer championship seasons. I've got to listen to that. Voices del Valle, fresh voices, bold stories made in the valley.
Voices del Valle, find us on KPBS or wherever you get your podcasts.